Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding right your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
This on? Hello?
We're all science people.
Science. Exactly.
We know it's a good idea because it's lasted.
There's chemistry in here. There's biology in here.
It's in whiskey. It's in ice cream. It's in who you fall in love with.
Rules.
And ethics. And everything else.
We can make the world better for everybody. Everybody.
Starting now.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to Science Rules. I'm your host, Bill Nye. This is the show where science rules. This is where we talk about the universe and our place within it and how we know all that. It's with science. Now, everyone, it's a call-in show, so if you want to be on, we want you to call in. Please go to askbillnye.com and type. Tell us your question, and we'll get you on the air. And I am, once again, joined by science writer and editor, longtime friend, Corey S. Powell. Greetings, Corey.
Salutations to you, Bill.
Now, Corey.
Bill.
50 years ago, I was a kid at that time.
150 or 50?
It's hard to tell when you look at me, but it was just 50. I've been living hard. I got very sick, sicker than I am today. I was sweating, the week, the shakes, the whole thing you described. Our family doctor, Dr. Cole, prescribed penicillin, and I felt better right away. But if I had been infected with that same bacterium today, I probably would not have bounced right back after taking penicillin and gone to school the next day. I would have just had to let the illness run its course for a week or so, or let it kill me. And the penicillin compound today is about the same, but the bacteria that infect us have mutated. They've changed. Penicillin is completely ineffective against many of them. And so as they keep mutating, Corey, we're facing a serious problem because we got all these diseases and we don't have the drugs we used to have that can fight them. So today we are talking about preventing an antibiotic apocalypse. And today we have someone I think is just an extraordinary guest. She's a microbial ecologist at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst and the leader, a leader, in finding new ways to fight bacterial infections. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Peg Riley. You have a big idea, right?
I have lots of them, Bill.
Well, let's pick one.
How about one that's connected to infectious disease?
Okay. Well, my big idea, let's go back to when you were a kid and you were taking that drug. And it 24 hours later, you felt better. What you didn't realize at the time was at the same time you took that drug, you also decimated your own microbial flora, your microbiome. And the microbiome is just all the bacteria and other microbes that live on, in, around. You shed them. They're everywhere on your body.
It's like your own inner ecosystem.
Exactly. Very complicated. And different microbiomes in different parts of your body even. It's very complicated. And we're just now starting to figure out what it means. What it meant then to you was that that antibiotic decimated your microbiome. And it was great that you felt better the next day, but very likely your microbiome took years to recover. We didn't know that then. We now do know that. And so what we've learned from that is that antibiotics, which are called broad spectrum, and they're chosen by pharma companies, particularly because they kill as many pathogens as possible.
And these things, when they were discovered, this was a miracle.
Oh, it still is a miracle. Absolutely. Yeah. We just didn't realize that there was a major trade-off at the time when we first started using them. And that trade-off was your microbiome, which we didn't even know existed really back then, versus you feeling better in 24 hours. That one. But now today, we do understand this bigger impact. And so my big idea is, why don't we go ask the microbes how they would interact with each other if they got challenged the way a pathogen challenges us?
Asking them in a microbiological way.
Exactly.
Okay, so how do you speak microbe?
Well, you go out into nature and you gather microbes. In my case, I gather a lot of bacteria. And I bring them into the lab and I just ask them to grow next to each other. And sometimes they're perfectly happy growing next to each other, but most of the time they're not because they're utilizing the same resources. And so they start to fight.
By resources, we're talking about growth medium, agar, and a
whatever
petri dish.
I offer them. You know, I can offer them basically chicken soup, or I can offer them something that's a little bit better than water. And by offering them different levels of nutrients, I can get them to compete more or less heavily. And so what you find when you do that is not only do they compete, but they like to kill each other all the time. All the time. Biological warfare writ large, constantly happening.
And this has been going on for billions of years, right?
At least.
Yeah, since microbes got established.
They emerged.
It's sort of it's one of those since the dawn of time type things.
Yes. Well, what's really cool, though, and back to my big idea was, if you ask the microbes whether they're producing antibiotics, these broad-spectrum drugs we use, chemicals we use in pharma, the answer is most of them say no. No, why would I want to do that? If I produce this antibiotic, I decimate my own community out in nature.
So is this having to do with – how does it work? It breaks down the membrane of the bacterium?
The antibiotic?
Either any of these things.
Well, the antibiotics have lots of different mechanisms. But what these guys are doing is that instead of antibiotics, they're producing this other thing, which is called a bacteriocin, and that's a protein.
And sin is an old Greek word for cut?
That's right.
Bacteria sin.
So they're basically going in and
C-I-N.
Forming pores. They form a hole and all the guts of the bacteria – And the reason this became so exciting was if you look at the phylogeny of all bacteria and you ask them—
When you say phylogeny, for the rest of us—
it's like a branching tree, and the limbs all connect to the individuals.
The family tree of bacteria.
The family tree of bacteria. And you ask them, how many major limbs produce antibiotics? The answer's two. If you ask them, how many limbs produce these bacteriocins, these proteins that I'm interested in, the answer is everybody. Mm-hmm. So we know it's a good idea because it's lasted in evolution. And so if you ask what's the difference between antibiotics and bacteriocins, the answer is bacterians target their killing like guided missiles. So think of an antibiotic as an H-bomb. It drops. The forest is devastated. The bacteriocin is a guided missile. It goes in and strategically kills one target in the woods. And that makes sense from an ecological perspective because the bacteria don't want to kill their environment. They just want to get their competitors
away. Their neighbors, right.
They want to kill the things that eat the same foods they eat, which are members of their same species. So this is actually within species warfare.
I want to get to somebody who I believe exposes herself to all kinds of microbiomic species.
Yeah, I really want to find out if most of the microbes are our friends— Is exposing yourself to more a good thing? So let's
Jenny,
talk to
are
Jenny
you out
find
there?
Out.
Hello, is this Mr. Nye?
Yes, it is. Where are you calling from, Jenny?
I'm calling live from New York.
From New York.
New York. The town's so nice they named it twice.
The Big Apple, as they say.
All right, there's 8 million people running around with all those microbiomes, and there's you. Tell us your story, Jenny.
Well, I have a adorable dog named Ray. He is 8 years old, and I adopted him last year. And I have a kitten named Rye. They're a dynamic duo. However, they are incredibly disgusting. As animals are. You know, Ray constantly he sneezes everywhere due to allergies. Licks his butt. He eats his poop and then vomits it up and then licks it up. which are, you know, pretty general dog behaviors. But, you know, as a dog and pet owner, you love your animals and you just want to be around them all the time. So I am guilty of letting them all come on my bed. And I'm just wondering how much of a disgusting monster I am for letting them do that. And am I susceptible to any germs or diseases?
Oh, Jenny, far from disgusting, you're adorable. That was a great story, and I applaud your pet friendliness. Let them sleep with you if you wish. That if that makes you happy,
really?
That's a good thing. Sure it is. You already share your microbiome in part with your dogs and cats. If we were to sample the bacteria in your gut, you would share quite a few with your dogs and your cats. It's because of the things that you just described. Let's not go into the ones you described. Let's talk about like licking your face and kissing, and you're constantly sharing your microbiomes. And if you're healthy now, what's the worry?
There you go, Jenny.
That's true.
Party on with Ray and Ron.
Thank God.
Now you can relax and just enjoy these great pets you have.
They might vomit in my bed, but hey, you know microbiomes are
on.
For everybody.
We can't guarantee it'll be pleasant all the time. We can only say it doesn't seem dangerous.
Jenny, thanks for hanging around.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And I believe we have Chris on the line. Chris, are you there?
Hi, yes.
Welcome to Science Rules. Where are you calling from, Chris? Where are you sitting in your cloud of bacteria?
I'm currently in Valdosta, Georgia.
Okay. And are you worried about disease, or are you feeling healthy, or are you feeling concerned?
I'm healthy, but I'm concerned because I am allergic to amoxicillin, penicillin, and tetracycline.
That's another serious issue, is people who have allergic reactions to some of these antibiotics. What is your specific question that you have here?
So I work with copiers all day, so I was worried, what's the worst pathogen I could be exposing myself to on the copiers?
Your copy machines.
Yes.
Is that what you mean?
You mean like you're pressing the same buttons and working the same machinery that other people do and they might be infected? Is that what you mean?
And people taking
pictures.
We're a return
center, so we get copiers from hospitals and other places. And so we're opening them up to the internals and the heated products that are inside the copiers as well.
Okay, got it.
Well, Chris, that's a great question. And I can understand why you'd be concerned, because I personally try to avoid hospitals at all costs. That's not where I want to go when I'm sick.
Well, the guy's working for a living.
I know. And that's why it's a great question. You have to protect yourself. But the good news is that most of the bacteria that you might be worried about aren't going to survive that process of transport from the hospital to your lab in any sort of environmental condition. But having said that, are you a pretty healthy guy?
Yes, I'm very healthy.
Then I would chill out and just enjoy your job, because you have a microbiome of your own that's powerful, and that's in part what's keeping you healthy. It's also making you smarter, and it's making you less depressed, but those are other issues for another show, Bill.
No. Okay, we'll have, yes. Okay.
Yes.
Another show.
Thank you.
Microbiome and your overall health and happiness.
Yes.
Check.
Depression and...
I mean, the important and quick point is that this environment of bacteria in your body is actually doing a lot of beneficial things
right.
for you. There are very good reasons why you don't want to just take a broad spectrum antibiotic and mow them all down, because that's part of the healthy you that you're getting rid of.
That's right. And the viruses as well. We've been focusing on bacteria, but the viruses won't last that long on that equipment either. So keep forging ahead and making those hospital copiers work.
So, Chris, do you feel like you have to wipe everything down with alcohol or something like that?
Only when we get ones in with blood on it.
Ugh. Oh, my goodness. Well, okay, now I'm going to take a step back. I didn't know that...
Take a step forward, Peg.
...they were covered with blood. Okay, I would talk to your...
Let's say he is the supervisor. Let's just say he's in charge.
Jeez,
what should he do?
Louise, I would tell the hospitals to clean them before they send them to you. I mean, come on, that's just basic. Basic safety rules.
Well, a lot of times it's the drivers. Sometimes the drivers will cut themselves when they're transporting them.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, Chris, you really can rely on your microbiome to keep you pretty safe, and avoid antibiotics when you don't have to take them.
So, on another note, where do you get your microbiome to start with?
Ah, that's a great question.
Where did Chris get his microbiome?
Well, if he was... Well, I don't know if we can go this way, but if he was born vaginally versus C-section, he got different microbiomes.
I was C-section.
You were a C-section.
And well, look, he's fine.
Well, of course he's fine, but he's a healthy guy. But what we're now learning is that when you're born with a C-section, you don't gain the benefit of your mother's microbiome that's passed on to you through the birth canal. And so quite often—
How does it get all over your skin as an infant?
It just gets all over you and you ingest it.
You ingest it, yes.
Breastfeeding, I mean, you get microbes.
But what about
that
if
way?
Your mom is all smoochy and cuddly and so on? Don't you get that, full of microbiome-y things?
You do, for sure. But it's those first few moments of life that have a huge impact later. Well, who gets in there first and sets up house? So in a C-section, what we're learning now is that quite often you will have bacteria that are found in the hospital rather than the bacteria found in your mom.
Wow.
Yeah.
But does that affect your health?
Long term, it could. Now, Chris has made it this far very healthy, and we're delighted.
Congratulations, Chris, by the way.
Thank you.
But we're also now concerned. We know so little about this microbiome. It's such a young science. But these kinds of facts are emerging. Someone born through a C-section has a different microbiome than if they're born vaginally.
So does somebody have a plan to take a swab of the vagina and give it to the kid when he's born C-section?
Well, it's the same idea as fecal transplant, right? You've heard of that?
Yes, we've heard of it, but many of our listeners may not be all the way on board with the concept.
Okay.
Corey and I have had a little experience with these filmmakers, with this guy who went to extraordinary lengths. But that aside, Chris, you're feeling good?
Yes, I take multivitamins and I drink healthy drinks and shakes to keep my bacteria up.
And you open those copiers up and you're exposed to gently exposed to almost dead bacteria all the time, and you just build up a whole catalog of antibodies. Way to go, man.
Right. Yeah.
And maybe
you're probably healthier than most people because you get exposed to all those crazy bacteria.
And maybe ask the delivery guys to, I don't know, wear gloves or be a little more careful when they're loading and unloading
trucks. You know what Uncle Bill says about gloves? Gloves are tools. Gloves are
tools. That's right. We have them.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you.
Stick around for more science rules after this.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on Auto Trader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.
Science Rules is back.
So before we spoke with Chris, Dr. Riley, you were explaining bacterial warfare and how bacteriocins are like guided missiles. I'm sorry, but wait. No.
I knew that'd get you.
Yeah. Well, I presumed. You know what happens when you presume, Corey?
Oh, I know what happens.
You make a purge out of you and me.
Yeah.
But before we go there, I presumed that bacteria are not killing their own species. They might kill a subspecies or a nearby, genetically nearby species. But you're saying
you would be wrong with that presumption.
Well, that's why we're talking about this. So did they deploy it directionally or something?
So think about it this way. You have E. coli living on the mucin in your gut, and it's happily chomping away.
What's mucin, by the way?
It's that that
lining?
Mucoidy lining of
your mucoidy lining.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Got a little mucus just kind of flowing all over.
Your
inside coiting. Things, making it all nice and smooth and glistening.
And E. coli are just happily munching away. And let's say that at lunch you ate some slightly raw hamburger meat, and a new E. coli entered your gut. It has to do two things. It has to survive in your gut, which it's evolved to do, but it also has to find a space in your gut. And if other E. coli are there, it can't get in. So what it does is it produces a bactericin that will kill just those strains of E. coli, releasing that environment for them to now invade.
And also, if you're a bacterium, you're going to make a molecule. you want to make an efficient molecule. You want to overdo it because it takes energy, your bacterial resources, right?
Exactly. And so these guys only do this, they only make these molecules when they're stressed out by their neighbors, by their close neighbors.
When you say stressed out, the neighbors are competing for the same sugar or whatever they have.
Whatever stress in the environment they feel. So it could be just nutrients are depleted or oxygen levels are low or high, whatever bothers them.
Okay, now, Peg, I want to back up here for a second because you were talking about, you know, you don't want to mow down your microbiome. You don't want to clear out all these beneficial bacteria that are in your body. But that first problem, the big problem of antibiotic resistance, how do bacteriocins help you against that? Don't the bacteria then develop resistance to the bacteriocins as well?
Absolutely, they will. And that's where we have to be a little bit smarter. Now, if you look at the evolution of bacteriocins, the bacteria have survived using these. Most every species uses them. And what they do is they have a huge panel of them. And so you're constantly selecting for a new protein that can do the job better. So in the human parallel, you have antibiotics. And we have the first one, penicillin, great thing, till it's not, ampicillin, tetracycline, oxytetracycline, and we invent or discover one after the other because of resistance. The bacteria don't have to wait for that. They have tons of these proteins.
Well, they've been at it for billions of years.
That's true.
Not
they
a
did
few
have
decades.
A head start. Yeah. So what they do is they just cycle through them. And it's actually akin to rock, paper, scissors. The bacteria play a game where they bring in a new protein, resistance evolves, the producer disappears, and now being resistant can be costly. And so sensitivity evolves, and then a new producer comes in, and it just cycles round and round and round.
So the premise of your bit, if I understand it, is to identify the bacterium with which I am infected, then show up with the proper bacteriocin.
That's right.
All right, we have another caller. Chelsea, are you out there?
Yep. Hello.
Where are you calling from, Chelsea?
I am calling from Minnesota.
Well, that's a big place. Are you allowed to tell us specifically where in Minnesota?
St. Cloud, Minnesota. So it's like central Minnesota, like right in the middle.
Not far from the source of the Mississippi River.
No, I live right next to it, actually. It's my backyard.
Yeah, next to it is, for me, is a lot like not far. So, cool. Thank you for calling. What's your question, Chelsea? Hit us.
Okay, so if hand sanitizer is helping make antibiotic-resistant bacteria, then why do they have it everywhere at hospitals and, like, in schools and, like, everywhere I go, there's hand sanitizer. But I'm always told that I shouldn't use it.
Who's always holding you that?
I have heard that from many, many people when I was in, like, college or, like, biology professors who are like, you need to wash your hands instead of doing that. And I have a husband who's also always telling me that. And he's a wildlife biologist, but still. And so I get this message constantly that it's going to create this super bug if we all keep using it and not washing our hands. And so every time I'm at the hospital, I'm like, well, it's right here, so it must not be that bad. It's
well, Chelsea, you know, your husband, I hate to do this, but he's actually right. And
it's
Bill would know this.
It's going to happen.
Bill would know
this. Most husbands, clueless. But in this one specific...
Well, he's a wildlife biologist, too, right. so I have a fondness for
And they may have been
those.
Married many years before that happened, so
perhaps.
Who's to say?
But anyways, Bill would know the answer to this if he recalled the first time he met me, but perhaps it wasn't that memorable.
Hold it. You're the guest.
Oh. Am I not supposed to be pushing
no,
you?
No, you're supposed to be the fount of knowledge. You're supposed to lay it on us. I'm hopeful.
So Bill may recall now that when he was in my lab at Yale 20-some years ago, we're both very old now, he brought out his Purell bottle. And I said, Bill, what? Why are you using Purell?
You taking leave of your senses?
And he looked at me and said, well, you know, I got to shake all these hands every day and I want to stay healthy. And I said, oh, give me a break. Just wash your hands, Bill. And what we did, he never called me back, so I didn't get to show him the results. But we tested the level of Purell resistance in my lab shortly after that, and we found that 80% of the strains we tested were resistant to Purell.
Now, what is the active ingredient in Purell? I know there's some alcohol, but what else is it?
It's alcohol.
It's just alcohol.
Yeah. So this combination that they created and labeled Purell, we would just spot that on our Petri dishes and ask, are you resistant or can you live in the presence of Purell? And most of them could live in the presence of Purell.
But I thought alcohol killed everything.
Not so much.
Not so much.
You know that there are sterilizing solutions in hospitals that things like Pseudomonas will grow in? They eat it for a living?
Corey, did you know Pseudomonas eating bacteria?
No, and that's terrifying that there are things that are living on the sterilizing
but
solutions that are supposed to kill anyway, things.
So let's get back to Chelsea, though.
To your point.
Yes.
I wash my hands whenever I can. But when you're out in public shaking hands, blah, 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 you're not always have access to soap and water. No, we did that test on the Science Guy show. Soap and water is the thing.
It is the thing.
That's the way to go.
And what I would do if I were not a nurse or someone in a hospital setting or someone in a daycare setting, I would just not use Purell and wash your hands as often as you can with warm water, soap, 20 seconds, the old routine. I actually showed Bill how to do this on his series years ago. And remember the hand imprints?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm a believer.
Look, I have young daughters, and this is a common situation that you're out doing a field trip in New York City, you're riding on the subway. Is it better to use Purell or is it better to use nothing if that's your option?
And Chelsea, what do you do?
Well, okay, I'm a teacher, and so I use my hand sanitizer in my classroom. Like all the time, because I don't want to go all the way to the bathroom. But I still, every time I do it, I wonder, should I just not do it?
Chelsea, are you a sort of healthy gal and feeling good most of the time?
Yeah.
So then you probably don't need to be using that Purell or other hand sanitizers frequently during the day. You have your own microbiome, even on your hands and your arms. And you really do have a very well-established pool of bacteria that can deflect a lot of the pathogens that you're worried about. It's a trade-off. But I want to get back to your original question, which was, is using this sanitizer leading to antibiotic resistance? And the answer to that is no. So you don't have to worry about contributing to the antibiotic resistance dilemma by washing your hands.
Alcohol is...
It's different than antibiotics.
Yeah.
So if you walked around sprinkling antibiotics everywhere, then I'd say you're in trouble.
What's the famous soap thing? Ends in an "an."
Oh, a triclosan?
Triclosan. Tell us about triclosan.
Okay.
That's the antibiotic in some soaps, right?
Yes.
And that's bad.
Well... Most of them are resistant to it now because people like you use it so much.
Not me.
So all those, I guess they're not so popular now.
Why are you busting my chops? You think I didn't learn anything?
I thought maybe you forgot because you never called me back after that visit. It was like 10 years
before
I heard
compelling.
From you.
But there was a time when there were the antibiotic soaps and antibiotic hand lotions, all these things with triclosan in them. They're mostly gone now because it turned out that the main thing they were doing was spreading a new kind of antibiotic resistance.
Exactly. Yeah. So most of the hand sanitizers you're using aren't going to be contributing to the antibiotic resistance crisis. So that's the answer to your original question. But I wouldn't worry as much about washing your hands constantly if you're a pretty reasonably healthy gal.
But is there something to a solvent on your hands taking stuff off it? Like if you had a bottle of alcohol on your desk and you'd wipe your fingers with it, would that be good?
Well, I wouldn't want to do it because I'm impacting then the bacteria that are supposed to be living there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're filling all the niches that a pathogen might fill. In fact, Corey said earlier, some of the bacteria are good, some are bad. But in fact, 99% of them are all perfectly fine, not hurting us. In fact, quite often helping us.
So even on your hands, where you're just kind of touching all kinds of random things, you have a healthy microbiome just right there
hanging
on your hands in front
there.
Of you.
And even washing your hands, you're not going to get rid of that microbiome. So that's
why
there.
Not?
It's part of, it's basically microbes are part of you.
They're attached to the crevices,
they've
pores
evolved
in your skin.
To live there and withstand
Chelsea,
all of that.
Chelsea, that was a great question.
It
an
sure
important
was.
Question. So carry on.
Thank you.
We have a caller. We have Bruce, who I think is going to ask a question that's going to lead to a great something everybody should consider. Bruce, are you out there?
I'm right here, Bill.
Where are you calling from?
I'm in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
It's gorgeous, gorgeous.
Welcome to Science Rules.
And it's March.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Let me guess, it's cloudy.
Yeah, there's a reason you're the science guy.
How do I do it?
Cloudy.
Thanks for calling. What's your question?
So, vaccines are great, and there's no question about the benefits of vaccines. But when, as a physician, when I look for evidence in favor of the flu vaccine, I come up empty. And I just wondered what you and your guests can do to help me with that.
Bruce, what I'm hearing is you can't get the level of confidence that you're hoping for. But isn't it true that 40 to 60% sounds a lot like 1 in 2? Sounds like 50%. So if I'm a regular guy and flu season's coming and I get a flu shot, I greatly increase my chances of not getting infected with that flu by getting the flu shot. About 1 in 2. 1 in 2 is infinitely more than 0. Is that true?
I agree, except what I know is that there's a 1 in 2 shot that your flu shot will match the strain.
Right.
What I'm not seeing is the actual results.
Okay.
I cannot find a publication that says people are not getting the flu. I see that they're getting a match in the strain, but show me proof that people are not getting the flu because they had the flu shot. That's what I'm having trouble finding.
Bruce,
I want to find it.
Okay. First of all, it's a great question. Second of all, what you might want to be looking for is the data that is published on the CDC that's about hospital admissions for flu-like symptoms. And
yes,
that, I think, will help. I actually just showed that to my students a few days ago. And
look, they're fine.
They're all fine. Not one case of flu. No. But, Bruce, it really is a tough question to answer because we don't have the kinds of studies you want. But we do have solid, extremely large samples of data on the numbers of individuals in a population or a subpopulation vaccinated versus the number of admittances to hospitals with flu-like symptoms. So I suggest you still get that darn flu shot and that you suggest to your patients that they get it and we all work together on herd immunity.
All right. Thank you, Peg. And
I agree.
Yes. thank you, Bruce.
Now, thank you, Bruce.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Carry on glorious and free. no, it is. Canada's glorious and free. The true North, it's what's not to love. So now.
It's a great place.
It is. And, you know, I'm an old Seattleite, and we love the Vancouver. Oh, my goodness. You wonder what's wrong with the U.S.? We can't get Shreddies. There's no Shreddies in the U.S. Just think how much better the world would be. This is a breakfast cereal, everybody, available in the British colonies. All right, now, Dr. Riley.
Yes, Bill.
We have a senator from Kentucky, a commonwealth here in the United States, who is a physician, Rand Paul. And he insists that people should be free not to get their vaccinations. Then in Washington State is a place where people have not gotten their measles shot, and now people are getting infected with measles. Do you have an opinion about this? Because I sure do. Let me ask you this. Is it what I jokingly refer to as a true fact or a false fact that if Dr. Paul does not get his vaccination, he becomes a breeding organism for a mutated flu or measles that could infect me. In other words, what he thinks of as personal freedom is taking away my freedom. Is that a reasonable way of looking at it?
It's a good way of looking at it.
Don't get me
wrong. But I would take it not down a notch. And all I would say is, look at the measles.
You don't want measles.
You don't want them. And where are those epicenters emerging? They're emerging in areas where the laws about vaccination or the local school district's regulations are lax. And they have very high frequencies of parents choosing not to vaccinate for personal reasons, religious reasons, or sometimes health reasons. And yes, there are children that should not get vaccinated because they have suppressed immune systems, for example. But if that's not the case, they've just published a study a Danish study on
Danes. That's a socialist country, you know.
Oh, maybe I shouldn't bring these, true facts up then.
Yeah, yeah.
But they did a study, and I believe the number was 6,000 patients, and they showed zero linkage between vaccination and autism or any other disease that has been invoked in the past. And we have to say that story's closed. Let's close the book, move on. Vaccines are safe. They're the safest drug that we have in the world. They've been tested that much. They're safer than your antibiotics, which, by the way, are toxic. They're safer than your migraine medicines. They're safer than your arthritis medicines, but we freely take those. So let's get over this and get vaccinated.
Now, right on.
There's another common misconception that I'd like to handle here. So my wife is a physician. She's a family practice doctor. And all the time people come in, they have ear infections or they have other types of infections, which are clearly viral infections, and they want an antibiotic. And she says, an antibiotic does not work against a viral disease. They say, I don't care. Just prophylactically, I want it anyway, just to be safe. Can you talk just quickly about what is the difference between a viral and a bacterial disease, and how big of a problem is that in encouraging antibiotic resistance?
Well, it's an enormous problem. Viruses are not bacteria. Viruses are probably not even alive, although some scientists argue about that. They're obligate parasites, and they don't respond to antibiotics. The antibiotics don't have a way to get at them. The problem really is not that you take the drug and it doesn't work. Not only does it not work, it does work against your microbiome.
And it's killing other stuff.
It's selecting for resistance and all that other stuff in your body. And so now your body, if it's got 10 to the gazillion microbes, you've got a good number of that 10 to gazillion that are resistant to the antibiotics that you might need in the future. Now, when we get into the question of is a patient using an antibiotic the cause of antibiotic resistance, I'm going to have to say that is not our biggest problem. As you guys know, most of our antibiotics are not used in human or animal health. They're used in food production. And that's another question for another whole show, Bill.
Yeah, Bill, why haven't we booked another couple
shows? Why don't I get a hotel
shows?
And stay for the week?
Well, maybe you will. So
I want to know, what can I personally do?
So, Corey, that's a great question. And what you can do is make decisions in your own life that will impact the use of our very precious drugs, the antibiotics. We talk about them as now being decimated, and that's true. We're running out of them. But there are still efforts to find new ones. And if we choose to use them more appropriately, which means less often, only when needed, completing courses of antibiotics, we want to save those. So you can do things like choosing food that's produced without antibiotics. That's where a lot of the antibiotics are being used in agriculture. And so let's make choices that really impact, like don't go to, you know, the chains that buy meat from, you know, farms that use antibiotics. That's a huge one. And MassPurg at my university, which is a student advocacy group, was instrumental in helping some of these chains stop buying that kind of meat. And those are the stories I give my students. You can act with your wallet. And that's a really powerful tool. And we forget that each of us as individuals, when we start acting with our wallets, we can have an enormous impact.
Way to
and
go.
In fact, we can change the world,
change
Bill.
The world. Now you're talking.
Now you're talking Bill's language.
You hear that? Lightning.
Lightning round.
Lightning superheats the atmosphere, a portion of the atmosphere, hotter than the surface of the sun for a moment, which produces a shock wave, a fabulous fluid mechanical effect, which we reckon we hear as thunder. So
it's a very rapid event, which would seem like leading us to some rapid-fire questions.
Are you ready
guest.
For the lightning round, Peg?
Yes.
She looks terrified, which
here
is exactly what we want.
Is it true that not finishing your antibacterial round contributes to antibiotic resistance? Yes or no?
Yes.
Because they mutate.
Exactly.
Crying out loud. How do you tell good bacteria from bad bacteria?
Just focus on the good.
Oh,
all right.
Wow.
Most of them are. You'll be right 99% of the time.
How often do I really need to wash my hands?
As often as you can.
Okay.
The 5-second rule. Is there any truth to it?
I honestly don't know.
Something's fallen on the floor.
Well, something's fallen on the floor. Do you pick it up and eat it?
I don't, but that's just me.
Okay.
Why not?
It's not based on science. It's just a personal preference.
Do antibiotics work on viral infections?
No.
Does zinc affect bacteria or viruses, or is taking a zinc tablet a homeopathic myth?
You know, I don't know the data on zinc, so I'm not going to answer because you know what? If you don't know the data, you ought to just not have that opinion.
Oh, no, but no, this is a podcast. We're just lousy with opinions. No, that's very, nobody knows, but they sell a lot of it, so maybe the who knows? Okay. What is your, if you have one, what is your favorite bacterium?
I know there are a lot to choose from, so
we can
give you a minute to think.
No. My favorite is E. coli.
Aw.
And for several reasons, it's the lab rat of the microbial world.
Oh, so it's lovable.
It's lovable, and we scientists use it all the time.
And there's a lot of strains.
Lots of strains.
What is the E in E. coli?
Escherichia.
Escherichia.
And what does that mean? Oh, who knows? It's Latin.
Who knows?
Okay.
It's Latin. My mother will be sad because she's a Latin scholar.
This has been a great time. Am I right?
You are right, Bill.
Our guest today has been Dr. Peg Riley, who is studying bacteriocins, which will be the future of our relationship to disease. Thank you so much for being here, Doctor.
My pleasure.
I'm Bill Nye.
I'm Corey Powell.
Remember, when it comes to the bacteria and disease portions of our universe, science rules. Science Rules is produced by Jordan Bell. Claire Rawlinson is the senior producer. Our engineers are Jared O'Connell, Casey Holford, and Brendan Burns. Our episode was mixed by Casey Holford. Chris Bannon is the chief content officer of Stitcher. And remember, at Stitcher, science rules.
Stitcher.
I'm standing outside Smithsonian's National Museum of American History. Inside, there are like a trillion objects, and I have to go in there and find 10.
So we open a drawer here, and there's Indiana Jones's jacket and Indiana Jones's whip.
What is this?
Now Prince donated this guitar.
I'm Asif Manvi, and I am lost at the Smithsonian. Where do I begin? This place is obviously full of fascinating stuff.
Fonzie's jacket, right? Worn by Henry Winkler on Happy Days.
There are 156 million objects in the Smithsonian's collections.
Here are Muppets.
These aren't just objects. They're pieces of America's self-identity.
I'm looking at a robe with the name Muhammad Ali.
Only 10 episodes, only 10 objects.
That's pretty amazing.
Lost of the Smithsonian is out now. Subscribe now in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.